they see the results of their investment, which are minimal. We should all be concerned about this, Jill. This is the future of our city. We keep on talking about funding in the future for the Boston Public Schools, but for the city at large and how funding is going to go down. But yet the school system continues to put in a lot of money and get very little results back. More important than money is the lives of our kids that are being affected by this.
I'm Jill Shaw, and you're listening to Last Night at School Committee. Ross Wilson and I are here to summarize for you what happened last night during the Boston Public Schools School Committee meeting. Ross, good morning.
Good morning, Jill. So, Jill, last night, the meeting began with the superintendent's report, where she announced that exam school admission decisions had been released at 4:30 p.m. yesterday afternoon.
And you have not one, but two horses in the race. So she released it at 4:30 p.m.
Right. So the oddity about this, Jill, is it was released at 4:30 p.m., but deposits on the majority of private schools, non-refundable private school deposits, were due at 12 p.m. yesterday. So BPS, while they lauded the fact that they did this earlier
and got it out
earlier, it almost made it worse, Jill, to get it at 4:30 after you made the deposit at 12.
Yeah.
Because you're like, could you not have just made that? Could have got it out at 9 a.m.? And again, Jill, as we've noted, BPS has lost about 10,000 students over the last number of years. This is no way going to keep more students in the district. It actually just loses more students. Just really sad.
Right. There was a second conversation about data. It has happened in the past that the math has not been correct. And so Vice Chair Michael O'Neill asked this question about the algorithm and data behind the notification of acceptances yesterday.
We're comfortable with this data that, you know, it has been vetted.
Very much. Yes, it's been vetted and re-vetted. Yes.
Right, Jill. So interestingly enough, parents have been behind much of the data analysis. They've pointed out the errors in the past when BPS has made errors. Parents have been behind helping the school committee rethink their policy around points.
Right.
And parents, again, last night, Jill, rallied very quickly with a Google Doc and began to pull together all the data and to begin to make sense of it. And BPS showed no data last night. So
we'll, you're saying like parents literally pull up Google Sheets behind the scenes and start plugging in all of their data to see if the calculations were made correctly.
Right. And I don't want to make any predictions.
Both those who got in and those who did not get in.
Correct. Right. So essentially families all add to the Google sheet, you know, try to make sense of what happened.
It's crazy. They don't trust the decisions.
Correct.
Like, to that extent.
And Jill, I'm not going to remark on that Google sheet or the data, but I got to say, I think one of two things happened with this policy.
Yeah.
Either there was remarkable growth for students who applied to exam schools, like much higher scores, many more higher scores for students. Either there was remarkable growth, substantial remarkable growth, or BPS miscalculated the numbers again.
Well, the superintendent did say that she was going to share some information with school committee at some point in time, but it does absolutely sound like BPS needs to show their math to the public.
I just hope that we're not going to be months of debate around this again, Jill, but hopefully BPS will be transparent soon enough.
Yeah, and the chair, you know, offered this comment on opportunities for students who applied for but were not offered a seat in the exam schools.
We may be losing students that we would otherwise like to keep in the district by virtue of not being able to provide them with a product, a seat in a school that they feel will give them what they need next. Because I don't feel that in a time when we are losing students that we want to lose any of them. So how do we begin to hear and think about ways of accommodating students or in growing stronger programs, period, for all of our students?
Yeah, Jill, it makes sense, right? I mean, the chair is saying, can we keep kids in BPS? But we've seen no movement from Boston Public Schools to do that. The meeting then moved on to public comment, where several people who work in the area of mental health in Boston Public Schools testified, trying to make sense of the $20 million announcement from the mayor a couple weeks ago, which is not actually going to go into schools, but rather into the city's Department of Mental Health.
The superintendent and the mayor recently announced a substantial investment of over $20 million in mental health. But that funding is being directed to the Boston Public Health Commission and not our schools.
So it's an important point brought up by members of the public. Where is the money actually going? The announcement definitely made it seem like it was going directly into the schools. And maybe it is, you know, through public health, there is going to be some sort of programming that's delivered directly to students. I guess therein lies the question that was asked over and over again at public comment last night. The only report of the evening was a quarterly report on Transformation School.
What typically happens after the school committee votes on the budget, it goes to city council. School committee approved the $1.5 billion budget last meeting. It goes to the city council. And what happens in BPS during this time period when city councils, before they vote, is they try not to have anything substantially presented, right?
Right.
They don't want any...
Nothing to rock the boat.
Nothing to rock the boat. Keep everything calm, right? So they really had no agenda other than the quarterly Transformation School presentation. This is a requirement from the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education that the school committee must hear a report every quarter on Transformation Schools.
And it's like, let's just remind the public, why does DESE require this report every quarter?
Well, because DESE was concerned that BPS has so many schools in the bottom 5%, 1% of schools in the state, and that in the district improvement plan, DESE was concerned that BPS wasn't having enough sense of urgency around improving student performance in those schools. This is a quarterly report that BPS must do. But last night, Jill, this was not an ordinary presentation.
No, it was a very ordinary presentation.
right. And the school committee members actually used this ordinary presentation to have a conversation with the superintendent about their frustrations and the execution of her team around everything in the district.
Right.
Also, Jill, not only did they express frustrations about how the superintendent and her team were operating the district, they also expressed concern around receiving and understanding data and presentations in a timely fashion so that they can actually react to them. This was highlighted by the frustration from member Cardette Hernandez.
On a process question, I am just saying, and I will bring this up in new business, I submitted a bunch of questions. None of them were even, they weren't even not responded to. They just like were not responded to at all. It wasn't like we can't get it or we'll get it to you eventually. They're just like radio silence, including the follow-up to the questions. We have a process problem. I'm naming it here. We need to bring it up in new business on how we're going to solve it.
The superintendent and Mr. Cadet Hernandez then go back and forth on process.
I would just say, Member Cadet Hernandez, in the Excel spreadsheet that was provided, there is really good detailed data in there that is definitely worth a look. That includes every school broken down by state accountability, chronic absenteeism, both midpoint and endpoint. So first 90 days and then end of March and then what that changes, as well as MCAS ELA, MCAS math, and shows both the growth as well as the meets and exceeds. So I think that's actually, I think, going to be really helpful in understanding sort of where the schools align. If it would be more helpful to like provide it.
We didn't get that spreadsheet. We have an email with a school presentation, the equity impact statement, and a cover memo. So just.
Can you just clarify where it is?
So the email we got, I can send it to you, Megan. In the email we got, it can be, then it's buried. The email we got is a presentation. I'm just like, I'm not getting checked on this in this meeting. If there is if there's an email with three bullets and it's like, look at these three things. Those are the three things I'm looking at. I can go dig around for an Excel spreadsheet. I love that conversation's happening, but like if it's valuable, that's what we're looking at. And just, I'm really keeping it real. My email wasn't even respond. It wasn't like, hey, Brandon, go search this Excel spreadsheet.
Well, I think one of the things is in the glorious half hour that you and I get to spend every week, I think if there's something at that point that you feel hasn't been given,
100%.
I will be more than happy to get team on there or to get you whatever you need to be able to make the decisions and ask the questions. So I think we can put that in place kind of quickly.
So Jill, this was a little bit different than we've heard. We haven't really heard this kind of back and forth.
This is very specific.
In a long time. Very specific, saying, no, I'm not going to be told that you gave me the data. You did not give me the data. And we've heard.
And you didn't give it to me or to anyone else on this committee in a form that we could all readily access it and digest it so that we could have a good conversation.
And man, Jill, the school committee members have been polite on this topic for years that we've been covering, right? They've politely said, can you please give us the data a little earlier? Mr. Cadet Hernandez was not polite last night. He was not going to be told that he had the data. He wanted to make it very clear that he's being kept in the dark and nobody is responding to him.
Okay, so there was those comments on process, but then we get to the data that was in the presentation last night. And Ross, we rarely hear from Mr. Chan, but he kicked things off by bringing the meeting back into the presentation and very specifically pointed to the abysmal performance data that was presented.
Am I to accept that the 27% of heavy lifting from students is acceptable at this point? And also the 11.4% of students demonstrating inferential comprehension. Is that something that we can live with, or
you want to talk about that?
I understand that you're presenting these as achievement.
Yeah.
In my mind, they're not.
Right. And then Mr. Cadet Hernandez went on to ask about how long is the superintendent and her team going to let this go on? If the schools are not viable and they haven't been for years, why does the district continue to prop these schools up?
So like, what is our standard for acceptable growth and unacceptable growth? And when is a school no longer a viable option for a family? I want to invest in adults getting the belief systems down and learning all the instructional moves they can get, but not while my kid is waiting for them to build those skills. And so I'm like, there are schools that have been on this list for years. And when is it no longer something we stand behind and say, this is an actual choice for you?
So then the superintendent at one point starts to bring up facilities and the new rubric as a potential mechanism to deal with, in her mind, the fact that different families are looking for different things, and therefore this is not all about one thing.
I think the long-term facilities plan is attempting with data and with the rubric to allow people to be able to look at schools in any ways they want. If it's about proximity, great. If it's about the high-quality student experience, great. If it's about particular kinds of programming, great. They can look at it because we're not going to replace what parents want.
Yeah.
And that's the place that, as we start to think about looking at optimizing the district from a size perspective and a quality perspective, we just want to make sure that the community and the parents are able, and the students are able, to look at the same data that we're able to look at and have in the rubric a tool to help them do so more easily.
The superintendent saying, well, look, parents are making choices about locality or about what programs may be offered. You know, so we have to allow parents to make decisions, not just about performance, but about other things. You know, Jill, I bet you if you ask parents what is a baseline for school for them, is that their child is achieving, that their child can read, that their child can do math.
But that's not
right?
What she said.
It's a baseline.
But she's sort of suggesting that people might look at schools based on proximity to their home. They might look at schools based on high quality student experience. They might look at what kinds of programming. Why wouldn't they always look at all of those things? Why would you separate those out and say, well, you can have proximity, but you can't have high quality schools?
But Jill,
or you can have high quality school, but there's only a few of them, so good luck getting into it. Like, I don't, like, that's,
but
it's, they're not proximate.
Shouldn't a baseline be that my child will actually perform at the school? Like, will their needs will be met? Like, isn't that every parent's expectation?
Well, you can't search on that. That's not in the rubric. Maybe Jill, it's in the rubric. We don't know what's in the rubric.
BPS used to publish data around parent choice. They used to show how many parents choose schools 1, 2, and 3, how they rank schools.
Right.
And then they would use that school choice data to say which schools are being heavily chosen and which ones aren't. I would ask the superintendent, show the choice data for these transformation schools. How many parents are actually choosing these schools for their kids?
Well, and so Brandon Cardet Hernandez sort of makes some of these points that you're making.
And then at the same time, as we start most of our meetings with a lot of platitudes around like world-class education and all this stuff, like graduating kids from, that means those are the choices we're going to present to families that like fit into those values. And so having a history of kids leaving schools with low levels of literacy is not a world-class education. And so like that is no longer a viable choice in the portfolio of options. And so I just think like there's some of that. And while I agree, like we can have a fabulous leader who can turn around the school, there may have been a time, I don't know the history, where a lot of kids were still graduating while we were waiting for that right leader to come with low levels of literacy. And like, that's on our watch. And that's may have still, two things can be true, great choice today and not a great choice for the years that we were waiting around. And how long is the right time to wait?
The superintendent says that maybe we need to wait even longer, and that while we wait, maybe we can figure out some of the root causes of why these schools are so deeply underperforming.
We have to make sure that, yes, there's an optimizing to the system that has to happen, but we have to get at the root causes of what led to some schools being so disproportionate in this and other schools not. And we're working through those systems. And it does take time to do that. But in the meantime, the things we can do in our control is make sure the materials and the instruction are to par. And that's what we're working on.
I mean, you got to be kidding me that you don't know what the root causes of the problem are. These are deeply underperforming schools that have been underperforming for maybe a decade, maybe more.
Jill, it's really unbelievable that one, the superintendent, the leader of our district, who's been in and out of the Boston Public Schools for many years, is wondering what the root causes are.
She was there. She saw root causes, right? Poor curriculum. I mean, they now have high quality instructional materials with a capital H. Yeah. And before, I guess we had low quality with a lowercase L. I'm not sure.
Just so everyone knows, if your child went to BPS before, they had very low quality. Yeah. We now have high quality.
Now we train teachers. Yeah. We didn't train teachers. Now we have, it is all about leadership. So now we have some good leaders. But I mean, so root causes, come on. We know what the root causes of when we cannot educate kids well. We do understand why. Yeah.
And we have Jill, we often neglect this, but we have some great schools in our school system that get great results.
And great
for
leaders
kids.
And great
teachers.
It's
not a mystery.
And we'll get into this as well. The school committee members get into this, that, this is also about where are we investing?
And then Jill, Ms. Secretary Hernandez sums everything up.
If I'm leaving tonight, sort of headline for me is we will support low-performing schools in perpetuity with additional resources with a 90-day review cycle. And I love the analogy of if we all row the boat together, we finish the race. God bless America. But at what point, I think there actually has to be a policy. At what point do we offer someone a different boat?
And then, Jill, is it quite interesting? This is not often that this happens, where Mr. Cadet Hernandez asks a question of the people in the audience at school committee, who at this point in the evening are pretty much everyone who works in the district.
Because I feel like if you surveyed this building, real talk, and you were like, how many people sent their kid to the school with 23 percentile growth? Y'all know that that's not what's happening here. They're making different choices because they have enough information, because they know the name of that school, because they have enough information to make the choice. What is the policy that a school has been in turnaround or transformation? How many, and even with all the new system structures, routines, is it 5 years? Is it 6 years? Is it 10 years? Is it 20 years? Is it 2 years? We can't set up systems without an endpoint. Then we don't have a system. It's a system to what end?
So the questions from the committee included the topic of finances as well and the additional support that is needed to prop up these failing schools. Vice Chair Michael O'Neill continues the point that Mr. Cadet Hernandez is making with an analogy that also reminds the committee members that their ultimate responsibility is to hire and evaluate the superintendent.
Mr. Cadet Hernandez, I'm just thinking through what you're saying, and I hear you. Let me try an analogy and see if it works. We as a board hire the superintendent and we evaluate the superintendent. So we set up goals, right, for the board, and we set up goals for the superintendent, or we agree on goals with the superintendent, and then we evaluate the superintendent. And if at a certain point, year after year after year, the goals aren't being met, we're going to make a change. And I think if I hear you right, to me, it's almost like us saying to the superintendent, what is your evaluation process on these schools? And at what point do you say the goals for these schools aren't going to be met? And so what is your action plan on it?
It's interesting that this is the analogy. Is it interesting?
If it's an analogy. I think Mr. O'Neill is saying, I'm pretty sure he's talking about the governance of the school committee, saying our job is to hire and evaluate the superintendent. And shouldn't the superintendent be setting clear goals for the transformation schools and take action on behalf of the students?
Is that kind of what you, because I don't quite see it's us setting a policy at 30% whatever, but hearing from the superintendent, what's your plan on this?
I think it could be either or. I think it's all connected. There's the what's your plan? And then there's also, we vote on a budget that supports these schools at a higher level. And that means there is a kid somewhere else who's not getting that money.
So they just voted on the budget 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good point, right? Because these schools, that $1.5 billion budget, these schools are getting some of that money in the form of soft landings, meaning they're providing a buffer because to support teachers and staff and other things that wouldn't be there. You're just funding the school based on a per student formula.
Right. And the idea is that with these additional resources that if they go to these schools, they don't go to other schools.
Right. Those resources, that funding.
That funding.
Right.
That with those additional funding, you should have dramatic improvement.
So just to like go back to the beginning where the chair asked, can't we have another school for all of these kids that we couldn't let into these exam schools? Well, there's some of your funding.
Well, yeah, the answer is no.
It's providing a buffer to really low-performing schools.
That are continuing to be low-performing.
And not serving students.
And so when you have a tranche of 39 schools that are requiring and deserving, because those kids deserve it, but getting additional resources, and we are not having a conversation of how long that type of resourcing persists as part of a budget, like it's all connected. And so like, it could be as simple as, this is you are in transformation for 5 years with X percentage of growth. That is a real policy. That's like a real thing that we believe in, or it's tied to the superintendent's evaluation. But like you and I both know, like real talk, like what that, the thing that's going to actually move the needle is like, we publicly say a school is in transformation for X number of years. And these are the measures that they meet. I don't know what that is. That's for the superintendent to tell us.
Yeah.
But like, then we make hard decisions. Because if not, we're just talking about the same schools over and over again and being like, we'll give more money.
Yeah.
And that's great. And like patting ourselves on the back because there was like a 8% growth. And that's still 33%. And like,
it's a little bit of what I was getting at before. Like, at what point do you say, okay, the curriculum you've chosen isn't working, or the school leadership, or the professional development, or something? And what are you going
and
to do?
And the unsexy part of it. And at what point do we close the school and say, like, this is no longer working?
You know, you do have to wonder a little bit if this is sort of buyer's remorse on the school committee's part. They all voted for a budget, and now, you know, the next meeting, they get to look a little bit behind the curtain and see what they funded.
They see the results of their investment, which are minimal. We should all be concerned about this, Jill. This is the future of our city. We keep on talking about funding in the future for the Boston Public Schools, but for the city at large and how funding is going to go down. But yet the school system continues to put in a lot of money and get very little results back. And more important than money is the lives of our kids that are being affected by this.
Then the superintendent interjects and summarizes with this. Effectively, she says, ultimately, there are no good options here.
I think we have to recognize that BPS has been in the lowest performing 10%, and at times the lowest performing 5%, well before this committee, decades. We couldn't transfer our way out of this. We have to raise the boat of the entire district before we have enough seats that we could actually offer to be able to say we're moving a student from this school to a higher without having a domino every year.
We listened to this a few times, this quote. It's really remarkable what the superintendent is saying. The superintendent is essentially saying that the growth overall in the Boston Public Schools is well below average growth for a year. Across the Boston Public Schools, our students are making less than a year's worth of growth on average. Okay. The superintendent's saying, even if we move students out of our lowest performing schools, about a third of our schools, lowest performing in the state, even if we move students out of those schools into other schools, it won't make a difference for those students.
I know. And I think what school committee is saying is that's not the way you run a district. You don't just like keep transplanting students as if they are dominoes. These are not widgets.
But Jill, I don't even think she's saying that. I think the superintendent's saying all of our schools are really low performing.
If I move some of the widgets to an underperforming other school, those widgets will also underperform. This is net zero thinking.
Okay, it's net zero thinking, but the superintendent's basically saying there are no good options for Boston Public School students.
But buildings, she has great teachers, she has great leaders, and she has an unbelievable budget. So rethink it. Where do you put kids to fill up school buildings so that you can take, you know, excellent advantage of those great teachers and those great leaders, offer them all of the curriculum that they need and all the support they need to be successful, and get rid of some of the stuff that you don't need? You have too few humans in too many places.
Overall, what I'm thinking about is a lack of urgency that we're hearing from the superintendent and her team.
Yeah,
I mean, she's basically saying, just sit tight. We have these HQIMs, these high quality instructional materials. They should play out over a number of years. Our students will fail until then, but just hang tight. Things will be fine.
HQIM is just like the latest thing in EduTalk. I mean, that's like crazy.
I thought HQIM was it.
That
was
the silver bullet.
I've been waiting my whole career for HQIMs.
I don't know. But yeah. I mean, I have to say, it was extraordinary to hear the school committee all step up. You know, they just used this presentation to really express how they were all feeling, we do have a huge budget here in Boston. We do have extraordinary kids, and we do have lots of teaching talent and lots of great leadership.
Absolutely.
And we have so many buildings that we use too many of them. We water down and we dilute all of the great things that we have.
It was every school committee member last night used an ordinary presentation to do something extraordinary for each school committee member, which was to express their discontent and frustration with the way that the district is being led, including Chair Robinson.
And
it's more than urgent. We've been saying this for 50 years. It is urgent, but
yes.
But what's the tipping point change to say no more?
And that's what happened last night at the Boston Public Schools school committee meeting.
We appreciate hearing from so many of our listeners. If you have thoughts or concerns about how BPS is serving your students, please send us an email at podcast@shahfoundation.org. That's shahfoundation.org.
Thank you for listening to Last Night at School Committee. We hope that you enjoyed today's podcast. And if you did, please rate, review, like, and share it with your fellow friends, parents, and residents of Boston. We all have a stake in the future success of Boston students. Have a great day.